First up is item O. But before we begin the discussion agenda, I have a few brief comments on O and P, and they're related, as you know. This is a momentous moment for the judicial branch. With regard to the Trial Court Funding Act, its implementation and its benefits to all Californians, the evolution of the judicial branch, improvements to the administration of justice, and statewide equal access to justice, we are on the right side of history. I'm grateful to all of those who spent many hours and contributed to this very worthwhile effort, which is another, as we've done, a healthy self-assessment of an important piece of legislation that makes the judicial branch, as I always say, 16 years young. But now we can look forward, not back, and again, after constructive self-assessment, we have findings and recommendations that the Judicial Council can act upon, focus on, and move forward to work on the future of our branch of government. We'll soon hear from a number of you who worked on Agenda Item O, who helped craft the Act originally through negotiation, compromise, good faith, collaboration, and our own Administrative Director of the Courts, Judge Jarr, among them, about the details of what their study revealed. After that, we will hear from Judicial Council and Court Leadership on Item P, with a recommendation on a proposed new budget development and allocation methodology for the trial courts. Whatever the outcome of the discussions and the Judicial Council votes, both of these agenda items represent real progress in the evolution of our independent co-equal branch of government and in our ability to fulfill our branch's constitutional mandate. Many within and outside our branch contributed to the momentum that created the Trial Court Funding Act, the effort that implemented the Act, and now will contribute to the work that remains to be done and will always remain to provide equal access to justice for all. Regarding this final report, we do have a request for public comment on this agenda item, and I'll call Justice James Lambden as a member of the California State Bar's Commission on Access to Justice, as our presenters also thereafter would take their seats at the panel. Good morning, Justice Lambden.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the council, and my friends. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. As an ex officio member of the California Commission on Access to Justice, Justice Roby is the present chair. I was a former chair, and I've been a member of that group since its founding in 1997. The commission, as you know, is most interested in goal number one of the strategic plan adopted by the council in 2006. To see that there is access to all the people in California that need it. I'd first like to thank Judge Oral. I attended one of the public hearings in Sacramento last week of the report that you'll be considering today. I was quite impressed, and we would like to thank, the commission would like to thank Judge Oral and the members of the group for incorporating many of our suggestions in their report. Including the aspirational suggestions, which are included in the report on page 11. I was, however, dismayed last night when I was preparing to at least believe momentarily that you had not received an additional document from us, which attempts to flesh out with practical suggestions the aspirational goals which are included in the report. I've brought those along. I'm since told that they are in the pink pages somewhere as part of my comment submission. I brought more copies because I think it's very important that those of you who may not be able to get to the website or don't see it in the paper will be able to take a look at those. Before you get a chance to look at them, I'll comment on them, however. The list on page 11 of the report is aspirational. You'll see that it is the same as the first page of the report that's being passed out. It has such things as all litigants shall receive due process, courts shall be accessible, etc. However, there's an additional two pages that the members of the commission, through a working group, worked on to assist you in finding ways to measure those goals and make them more than aspirational, and to make them, therefore, accountable, and therefore, we hope, useful in your discussions with both the legislature and the governor's office. Now, let's give you a couple of examples. One would be that hearings will be conducted on a timely basis. Another would be that there will be adequate counter hours and that someone will answer the phone. We don't have a standard like that. We're talking here about standards and measures of performance that I think we could all agree, at least most of these, are inarguable. The public expects to get somebody on the phone. I was surprised to discover in the course of this that there is not apparently any statewide rule or statute that governs open hours for the courts. There is apparently either a family code section or a government code section that says something like the hours of the family court will be Monday through Friday. But we didn't find any sort of measurable statement of what the hours should be. And as we know, around the state during this crisis, there's a great deal of confusion about which courts will be open when, and attorneys that practice between courts, like the bad old days, may not know whether or not they'll actually have an open door. So each of these sections, you'll see, is tied to one of the aspirational goals. Each one contains several suggestions for measurable standards that could be included in our discussions, which we believe will resonate with our co-conspirators in getting out of this budget mess in the legislature and the governor's office. I think, as I have said, that many of these suggestions are inarguable. Some are. There may be discussions about how they would be implemented. But I don't believe that we will go too far wrong if we propose our future funding to be based on measurable items like these, so that we can prove our accountability to the people that are controlling our future restoration of funds. So I would conclude by inviting any questions you've got. I don't want to take much of your time this morning, and suggesting that I hope in your deliberations on the report you will find a way to incorporate these practical measurement items in your final approval of what I think is a very, very good effort to solve the problem that we find ourselves in. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them, and I appreciate your time very much this morning.
Thank you, Justice Lambden, and thank you and for your work on the California Commission on Access to Justice, and thank you. Please relay our thanks to the Access Committee, too.
Thank you very much. Good luck today.
I'll have the presenters take their seat at the panel.
Chief, members of the council, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Last May, the Chief Justice and the Governor directed appointment of a work group to look into the progress the judicial branch has made in the 15 years since the enactment of the Trial Court Funding Act of 1997. The work group consisted of 10 members, four of whom were appointed by the governor, and the remaining six of whom were appointed by the Chief Justice, all six of whom were members of the Judicial Council. I was honored to co-chair the work group along with former Sacramento Mayor and former Assemblyman Phil Eisenberg, who's here with us today.
Thank you.
The remaining members of the work group were, from the administration, Ms. Diane Cummins, Mr. Martin Hoshino, and Ms. Irena Ortega. The appointees from the judicial branch were Judge Emily Elias, Judge Marianne O'Malley, Judge David Rosenberg, Mr. David Yamasaki, and Ms. Angela Davis. And I want to note at the very outset of our presentation this morning the monumental contributions of the following members of the Administrative Office of the Courts: Ms. Jody Patel, Mr. Zlatko Theodorovich, Ms. Donna Hershkowitz, Ms. Pam Reynolds, Mr. Dag McLeod, Ms. Leah Rose Goodwin, Mr. Michael Gidden, Mr. Stephen Chang, Mr. Colin Simpson, and Mr. Peter Allen. And from the Department of Finance, Ms. Ana Mata Santos, Ms. Amy Jarvis, and Mr. Jay Sturgis. The truly heavy lifting in this endeavor fell to them, and they deserve a great deal of credit for this report. It was the consensus of our group from the outset that a comprehensive review and analysis of the Child Court Funding Act and the branch's success in fulfilling its expectations was far beyond what we could accomplish in a mere 5 months. But I think that what we have been able to accomplish will be of value to the branch. We have met 5 times since November of last year. We took on as much as we could in the period of 5 months, and we are pleased to present our report to the Judicial Council today. Before we get too far into this presentation, it is important for me to note unequivocally the major finding of the work group, and that is that the judicial branch has substantially complied with the goals and requirements of the Trial Court Funding Act, and we will, of course, speak more to the details of that as our presentation goes on this morning. The charge of the work group was substantial, and that was, number one, to determine how the state and the branch has progressed since passage of the Trial Court Funding Act in 1997. Number two, to inquire into whether the goals of the Act have been met. Number three, to propose options to the Judicial Council to effectively meet and maintain the goals of a state-funded trial court system and to enhance transparency and accountability. In addition, the charge to the work group identified 4 additional areas that the work group could but was not required to report on. Number one, an analysis of workload metrics, staffing standards, efficiencies, and other data relevant to evaluating the state's progress towards statewide funding of the trial courts. Number two, an evaluation of the cost drivers and other factors that affect a local court's ability to provide equal access to justice. Number three, an assessment of methods to enhance savings in the trial court operations through the use of administrative efficiencies and coordinated efforts among the trial courts. And number four, an identification of steps needed to increase funding transparency. The work group decided that these were critical elements, these additional 4 were critical elements in answering the question of the extent to which the judicial branch has progressed toward meeting the goals of the Act, and we have addressed each of these matters, which we will discuss further later this morning. At this point, I would like to turn the presentation over to the Honorable Phil Eisenberg for the next portion of our report.
Our chief members, thank you very much. This is not the Judicial Council room I sat in for 5 years, I can tell you that. It is much more functional and attractive, and honored to be back. One of the things that gets lost in American public life is any sense of history. Americans do not believe in history, tend to dismiss it, but one of the opportunities that came our way in the work group and was to reflect on the past. And all you have to do is look at the history of the courts in California since we became a member of the Union in 1850. And you have been organized in dozens of different ways, in different formulas, different structures, different combinations, different titles, all the way through. Change is the constant element of the court. It is not an occasional element of the court. And, of course, for a society which started off with 300,000 Europeans and 100,000 much-ignored Native Americans with a legacy of Mexican population and citizens, too, we developed a judicial structure that was essentially decentralized, as befits an agricultural society predominantly. But that legacy carries forward. So the courts have always been under change structurally, but one of the things we learned in the commissions on the future of the court, the court's 2020 commission, which I served on in the early 1990s, was that although change is constant, there are some trends. And one of the trends that's going on in America statewide and it's going on now is a slow movement to increasing, if not total, funding of state courts collectively by state government. Done differently in various states, done at different pace, but the trend is clear and is going on. Likewise, in California, that trend has always been there, and the tensions with local customs and habits have always been there, too. The modern experience of this activity started in the mid-1980s, at least in my experience, and you will see the Brown-Presley Trial Court Funding Act was the first activity. It's probably not totally accurate, but it's true to say that prior to that time, the state of California had paid for the appellate branch totally and for the salaries and benefits largely of the trial courts. But beyond that, the state would get sucked into funding only sporadically. But Brown Presley was a typical reaction to the problems of the court system and the growing need for a more standard administration of justice. And it was based on the premise that the counties were financially unable to expand their funding to courts because they were now constrained by a whole host of factors, not the least which Proposition 13 means that they could no longer increase what was about one-third of their revenue source, the property tax, just beyond their ability to control. And so a very complicated and bizarre result occurred, which was the transfer, if memory is correct, somewhere around $400 to $500 million was moved to support courts and counties simultaneously. And the theory being, if you give financial relief to the counties, hopefully that will either by replace state money or by the counties being able to divert some of their money would help the courts also. That led to an increasing demand by all the parties, which you will hear to this very day. The trial bar essentially said, well, God, we can't get to trial, ignoring for the fact that Americans don't go to trial very much. There are 20,000 roughly jury trials of all types in California every year. We have decided as a society, indirectly at least, we don't do trials as a way to do very much. The court system is much more an administrative and a judge-oriented court for legal decisions. But in any event, the state contribution to trial courts began to move up. And as you note from the slide point, a $500 million increase, about 68% of state funding. But the next thing that happened was the question of efficiency and realignment. Governor Wilson was newly elected. He came into office as a moderate Republican, and he wanted to do preventive government. And he was faced with a downturn in the economy of major proportions. So the notion of realignment, straightening out the relationship between state and local governments, was prevalent. And one of the things that happened is the trade with the court systems in the 1991 Act, the Trial Court Realignment and Efficiency Act, which I authored, which essentially said that the state pledged to increase trial court revenues supported by state funds to, by a date certain in the future, about 70%. And it was not a, it was a legislative intent, which, as you know as judges better than I do, legislative intents, what's the line, are like pie crust made to be broken. But it's a declaration nonetheless. And the state did, in fact, start to move up some funding. So you will see in the next slide some financial information. I'm going to come back to the predecessor. You'll see financial information on trends on slides 6 and 7 in the report that appear in the appendix to the report. And the distinctions have always historically been made between trial courts and appellate courts. In sum total and overall, the consolidated state contribution today to all court functions and all court levels is in excess of $4 billion. The trial courts get, and this is rough, it varies from year to year, but it's an approximate $2.5 billion today of state funds. Those state funds are a composite of general fund contribution and fees, fines, penalties, forfeitures, all the, you know, the earmarked revenue sources that are related to the court system. If we could roll back the slides, please, to the last, which gets us down to the current venture. After the Brown-Presley Act, after the Reform Act, after the consolidation and coordination of the courts, the attempt that I was very fond of to remove the jurisdictional limits between then municipal courts and superior courts for better efficiency and so forth, the judiciary began a self-examination and came up with, I thought, what were reasonable principles. First, as a constitutionally co-equal branch of government, you are entitled, the judiciary said, to manage your own affairs, financially as well as others. And after a lot of head scratching in the legislature and in the corner office, everybody said, ooh, okay, we agree with that. That means we don't have to deal with those administrative problems. They do. So judicial self-management may be attractive in the abstract, but you have to deal with the practicality of it. And the practicality of it is it's damn difficult, particularly in bad economic times. But the judiciary said we've got to move toward a more statewide system of administration of justice, even though you emphasize continued local control. They, I think it's fair to say that you have consistently asked for, as we say in the trade, a stable and secure funding source that is immune from all economic travail, wills of the voters, and everything else, which everybody wants and nobody gets, not even the education system in California, which has their much Proposition 98, has been able to find a cornucopia of money always to be available in bad economic situations and good. But it led to the act that created the new system of administration of justice. And after a lot of commotion and yelling and hollering and screaming, in 1997, the Trial Court Funding Act was adopted. I should probably say I was out of the legislature by a year for that time, but they tombstoned for me, a legislative phrase being somebody's no longer around, so do something nice for them or not as you see fit. But the Trial Court Funding Act, for whatever else it was the declaration of the state taking over the funding, the substantial burden of funding for the trial courts. Secondly, and most important and largely lost, it was a guarantee to county government that their contributions, although they would continue, would be capped, would not be increased. So that over time, as the court system grows, as the budget grows, the county share will be declining. And that is largely forgotten because it succeeded. The county's contributions have been capped. There's occasional grumbling from the counties they shouldn't give anything at all, but it's been capped successfully. When the Trial Court Funding Act was adopted, and if any of you have gone back and read the statute, you will find it crashingly boring. It is remarkably free of the usual histrionics of legislation and politics. We do not promise the world. It is not a guarantee of endless perfection. It is very much a workmanlike product dealing with state assumption of lion's share of trial courts, capping the county courts, and starting to set up a complicated system to allow the judiciary to handle the hard problem of how you allocate money between trial courts and, of course, appellate courts at the same time, which is what the council's doing. The charts that I had mentioned previously talk to you about the trend. I stipulate that in American politics, no level of money is enough for anything. But $2.5 billion for the trial courts, although it goes up and down and there is no guarantee, is still, in most people's estimation, a reasonable amount of money. The interesting part about these trends, of course, on the charts, on the two charts collectively, is that you see during a recession a decline of the general fund money being allocated to the court and a slight increase on the proportion that comes from fees, fines, penalties, which is controversial. One of your bodies, chaired by Judge Roby, was grumping about not relying on general fund money and relying on court fines too much. It is a different issue, but in the budget world and the political world, most of us say, if given a choice, you would rather not be solely in a funding stream where your competitors are the children of California, the folks who need health care in California, and the collective law enforcement activities of the state. On the other hand, that's a practical political caution. But all of this came about, and the work group went through these factors and considerations, basically to come back to the point where the judiciary started, which is judicial self-administration. We, I think, fairly easily came to the conclusion that you had substantially complied with the provisions of the 1997 Act. And the staff, the AOC staff in particular, deserves great credit for taking a complex piece of legislation of at least 60 pages, dividing it into discrete elements, summarizing and analyzing the elements, and pointing out in what way you have conformed. It's worth noting that if you talk about the elements, overwhelmingly the discrete elements are fees, fines, and penalties, and then systems of money exchanges, trial court, trust fund, and so on and so forth. And the legislation did not have the grandiose views that some people thought it did. It was helpful to go through that. It also helped us focus and to reach our main conclusion, which is that, if I may just digress for a moment, painful as it is, you're doing a pretty good job. I know you don't get any credit for that. And by the way, that's the business. You get no credit for doing things well. You will never get any credit for doing things well. That's expected of you. Don't hope for anything else. But the reality is, in America also, people only talk about things they're unhappy with and act as if that's everything. You have the tough job of managing a system. I think you're doing pretty well for all the problems that you face, and I was happy to be part of this result.
Thank you, Mr. Eisenberg. We appreciate your remarks. The next portion of the presentation will turn to Ms. Patel.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Consistent with the charge from the Chief Justice and the Governor, the work group undertook a process of determining whether the goals of the Trial Court Funding Act were met. But first, the work group reviewed the findings and declarations and rationale behind the decision to pursue trial court funding. This review revealed some key findings that include the following and are outlined in greater detail in your report, but a couple of the findings were funding of the trial court operations is most logically a function of the state. State funding is necessary to provide uniform standards and procedures, economies of scale, and structural efficiency and simplification. Structural improvement will provide for an improved court system, a uniform and equitable court system, and will therefore increase access to justice for Californians. The work group also looked at a sampling of judicial branch accomplishments that Mr. Eisenberg just alluded to. These accomplishments demonstrate that the judicial branch has met the goals of uniform practices and procedures, taking advantage of economies of scale, efficiency, and simplicity. The sampling alone contained 56 different items of accomplishments that we ended up categorizing into 8 broad categories. These accomplishments are highlighted in attachments 3, 4, and 5 of your Judicial Council report. You will note that these attachments reflect completion of express requirements of the Act and specifically describe programs, services, and activities that demonstrate achieving the goals of the Act. The work group's review of these attachments clearly revealed, as Justice Hull indicated, the impressive set of accomplishments in the judicial branch since the enactment of the Trial Court Funding Act. One of the biggest challenges for the work group was to determine how to determine if state funding has led to equal access. Clearly, the Trial Court Funding Act set equal access as one of its primary goals, but it didn't define it, even though the bill was about 60 pages, as Mr. Eisenberg just alluded to, and it talked about equal access throughout this bill. But at no point in the bill was it defined. So the work group reviewed several reports and studies, including the 2020 report from the Commission of the Future of California Courts, as well as the submission of the California Commission on Access to Justice, chaired by Justice Ron Roby. In the end, the work group didn't have a concrete definition of access to justice. But the work group did feel that at a minimum, equal access to justice may include the following elements, some of which Justice Lamdin just recently outlined. But they include all litigants should receive due process. No one should be denied access or disadvantaged because of language, custom, lack of comprehension, disability, or income. Neither geography nor physical impediment should bar the door to justice. Courthouses are designed and operated to ensure equal access, that access should be affordable, and that courts should have adequate number of judicial officers and staff. And lastly, that courthouse doors should always remain open. As we noted earlier, the work group identified 4 areas that could help assess how far the judiciary has progressed in meeting the goals of the Trial Court Funding Act. the findings of the work group were made with regard to each of these four areas, and Justice Hull in his opening statement had identified those four areas. The first area, metric staffing standards and efficiencies. With regard to this area, the work group found that the branch has substantially complied with the Act, fully completing most of the express statutory requirements. The work group further found that the principal area where additional work needs to be done is ensuring that resources are allocated to the trial courts in a more fair and equitable manner, consistent with the level of workload and other cost drivers. No less important is the work needed to be done to ensure that the state-funded system has resulted, where appropriate, in the adoption of uniform standards and procedures, economies of scale, and structural efficiency, all of which are consistent with the goals of the Trial Court Funding Act. The work group further found that the current approach to funding may, in fact, have exacerbated the county-by-county disparities in funding that existed before trial court funding, as a large portion of funding allocated is based on historical percentages that did not account for workload fluctuations. This method does not promote equal access and is not designed to promote statewide policies, priorities, or efficiencies. The work group received an overview of the Resource Assessment Study, it's known RAS for short, prepared by the SB 56 Working Group and adopted by this council this past February, as well as a presentation from Judge Earle's Trial Court Budget Work Group Subcommittee. And Judge Earle and her subcommittee will be presenting their recommendations immediately after this report. The work group was impressed by the work of both of the groups and felt that the RAS model is a significant step in ensuring funding is allocated in a more equitable manner. RAS, as you are aware, is based on workload, uses weighted caseload to create standard workload metrics, and takes into account changing needs over time. So as the filings fluctuate across our state, RAS takes into consideration those fluctuations and adjusts for that. Both the RAS as well as the work of Judge Earle's subcommittee, which includes key components of RAS, represent great strides in creating a funding model that leads to equity in funding our judicial branch. With regard to cost drivers and other factors impacting equal access, the work group found that similar to all government organizations, labor costs are the single largest expenditures in the trial courts, averaging about 79% statewide. Complicating this cost driver for the trial courts is the fact that there is currently a unique trifurcated system that exists in our trial courts. And the trifurcated system includes the courts negotiating salaries and benefits, the counties negotiating retirement benefits, and then lastly, the state providing funds for all of the negotiations that occur at the local level. The work group found that the facility operations and maintenance of our trial courts are also a significant cost driver, and that in implementing budget reductions, courts have made decisions that can significantly impact individuals' access to justice, such as closing branch courts or reducing hours. In addition, there are no statewide criteria for such closures or reductions. And I believe Justice Lamdin had alluded to this as well in his public comment. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Justice Hull to cover the remainder of the findings of the work group.
Thank you, Jody. As noted, the next slides continue a discussion of the work group's findings. We turn then to the methods that may be used to add to branch savings through administrative efficiencies and coordinated efforts. And I have to say that we were quite impressed with many of the accomplishments that are already in place. The Judicial Council and the courts both have demonstrated significant efforts to coordinate our activities, improve the system of justice, and contain our costs. I have two examples. One, there was the Judicial Council's Blue Ribbon Commission on Children in Foster Care that developed practices to improve the uniformity of practices and procedures statewide in the area of juvenile dependency and provided standards and guidelines for this critical work. Secondly, we would note there was also the Superior Court of Riverside County's Shared Procurement Service Program that used the court's expertise and resources to conduct competitive bidding for courts that did not have the capability to undertake competitive bidding in-house, and 18 courts joined in that effort. With regard to the steps necessary to increase funding transparency, the work group found that the AOC places a significant amount of material on the California Court's website for those who want to find it there. But we also found that did not mean that decisions about funding were necessarily transparent. The work group found that the posting of information on the Internet alone is insufficient for this effort, and that funding information and decisions must be in a form that is comprehensible to the layperson. The work group also found that funding information provided by the trial courts also needs to be more understandable to the public. Simply providing baseline budget information does not tell the public why and how decisions are being made as to funding priorities. There were additional findings in addition to the four categories identified by the chief and the governor, as I noted earlier in the charging document to the work group. We made one additional finding. As Ms. Patel discussed earlier, the work group examined a sampling of accomplishments made by the branch in developing uniform practices and procedures, taking advantage of economies of scale, creating efficiencies, and simplifying processes and procedures. Many of these legitimately are permissive and are not followed statewide by some of the trial courts, and indeed should not be. But others may in fact lend themselves to statewide implementation. The work group found, therefore, that in truly having a statewide court system, the Judicial Council needs to reevaluate the many accomplishments detailed in Attachment 5 to the report and consider making some of them mandatory where appropriate. We turn then to the work group's recommendations to the Council. In all, we were able to make 18 recommendations, which you will find in the executive summary and at pages 38 to 43 of the report. Given the time we have available to us this morning, we cannot survey all 18 recommendations here. The work group had hoped to have the time to consider indicators of equal access to justice that the Council could evaluate to provide greater transparency and accountability for the use of public resources. We did not have the time. But a review of our recommendations makes clear the work group's perspective, and that is that the process of evaluating the progress of implementing AB 233 is not complete. As the chief noted a few moments ago, the judicial branch's efforts to bring equal and quality justice to all is and always will be our ongoing responsibility. At this point, I do want to stress that our recommendations do not suggest greater centralization of trial court operations or suggest a usurpation of the authority of the trial courts. The work group understood and agreed with the concept that AB 233 was not intended to change or diminish the necessary authority of local trial courts, and our efforts here are not intended to do that either. But these recommendations do suggest that greater uniformity in the operations of the trial courts, where appropriate, can help achieve the goals of the 1997 Act. These two concepts are not inconsistent. Uniformity and sensible standards for equal access can easily coexist with the local control of trial courts in serving the diverse needs of their own communities. In summary, these 18 recommendations point to additional work that the branch must undertake to fully implement the Trial Court Funding Act and to achieve the goal of a state-funded system that guarantees equal access to justice regardless of the county in which one resides. We have come a long way, but there is still much work to be done. In short, the work group's recommendations fall into three broad categories: those relating to equal access to justice, those relating to ensuring that there is equity in funding of the trial courts, and those relating to efficiency, uniformity where appropriate, and cost savings in the judicial branch. You will see from the report that a significant number of the recommendations cannot be achieved in a day. Most suggest that the Council should develop indicators of equal access, should set statewide priorities, and should mandate the implementation of certain innovative programs and services that do not tread upon local court authority. But one recommendation that is immediate is recommendation number 6, and I'd like to spend a moment with that. Recommendation 6 recommends that the Judicial Council adopt a new method for the allocation of trial court funds to be implemented effective July 1st, 2013, for the 2013-2014 fiscal year. Simply put, the formula for trial court funding in place since 1997 cannot continue. Arguably, and in my personal view, it inhibits one of the most significant goals of the Act. The work group defers to the Council for the determination of that formula, but you will see in Recommendations 6 through 11 that we have been able to identify principles and factors that we believe the Council should consider in adopting a more equitable formula for allocating funds to the trial courts. In conclusion, we offer the work group's report and its recommendations to the Council for its consideration, and we would be glad to answer any questions the Council may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Hall. Thank you, Mr. Eisenberg. And I open it up now to questions, comments, and I invite members of the work group to please state their thoughts about this report. Justice Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. I just want to say that it was a rare treat for me to work with the other nine members of the work group, including Phil Eisenberg, the author, one of the co-authors of the Trial Court Funding Act, to be able to work with the co-author to understand the history and the intent that went behind all this was a wonderful opportunity. We had a hardworking group and a hardworking staff led by Jody Patel that did, I think, a tremendous amount of work in a relatively short amount of time. I completely concur in the recommendations, but I would like to just point out briefly what the group did not address, because that was not our charge, and that is the question of adequacy of funding as a whole for the branch. In my opinion, and I'm sure this opinion is shared by trial court judges throughout California, the reality in the neighborhoods that the trial courts work is that we have received a reduction in funding. The reality is that we have had to furlough and attrit, and many, many trial courts have reduced staff by 25 or 30%. You know, you can show me all the charts in the world, but that is the reality on the street. We have been able to backfill at the trial court level through various means, using our so-called reserves. The Judicial Council has moved money around, primarily from the construction fund to backfill. But those reserves are going to be gone, and construction projects have been slowed and stymied. So unless the overall funding situation improves, it's going to get more and more difficult for trial courts to do what they are charged with doing. Simply put, 1 cent on the government dollar is just not enough to maintain a judicial branch of excellence. So, again, that's a subject we did not address, but I needed to say that on behalf of the trial courts.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. David Yamasaki.
Thank you, Chief. So, I was not really clear on what we were going to find during this evaluation. And something that you just said, Mr. Eisenberg, hits home as I think back on what we did on this work group, and that is we don't really look for praise, perhaps. We just do, as a branch, what we're supposed to do. And this effort really identified the enormous accomplishments that have been achieved over the years by councils of years past, of councils of now, and certainly those within the branch who are going to be serving into the future. And it was just a fantastic observation and a discovery at the dedication that everybody who has been part of reforming this branch has had from the beginning, and just being able to see all of the things were just unbelievable. And it was a great exercise for us to actually put it in writing and also be proud of some of the things that we have done, and I don't know that we're looking for praise. Certainly we are. We should be patted on the back for the many things that we've done, but that's not what we're looking for. We're moving forward to try to make improvements with what we have, and going back to something that Judge Rosenberg said about, you know, how challenging it is, we're trying to do our best, and we have a great group of people who are endeavoring to do so. So it was really a privilege for me to participate on this work group.
Thank you, David. Justice Miller.
I also want to commend you and praise all of you for the historic work that you accomplished in this area. I do have motions, but I don't want to get ahead of others if they want to continue to praise you, and because I don't certainly want to cut them off. Like you said, we don't get to hear the praise that often. But when we're ready to reach that point, I kind of tried to group all these 18 recommendations into areas that they should go to, and I'd like to make those motions. But again, I don't want to get ahead of others.
I want to get my praise in here for what's happened. First, I want to say that I appreciate the governor and his staff and how they, at a very critical time in our budget, really a turning point, that this idea came about and we had their cooperation. I think we not only had the governor's cooperation, we had their interest, because I think that he appointed stars to this panel, this working group. And I'm grateful to have, I'm a fan of the history of this state. I think we learn from it, and I think we're stronger for it. I'm grateful that you, Mr. Eisenberg, were able to give of your time to come back and revisit this and to present today and to provide us with what you knew and what you lived through at the time that this was created. I mean, we look at it now as an act, a 1997 act. But those of us who worked in the legislature, who worked in the governor's office, those things do not come easily. We know the kind of work you put into that. And really, we look at it now, and it's a centerpiece legislation for the judicial branch. And it's shown to us the best collaboration. There's been good work that has gone on in the branch, but this has not been without the assistance of many legislatures, legislative leaders like yourself, governors who also saw the separation of powers and respected it, but also understood the budgetary constraints that would require attention by all Californians. So I have a great deal of respect and gratitude for what happened in 1997. Really, we can tell it started well before 1997. As you pointed out, in 1988, there are incremental steps that happen in the legislature before there's a breakthrough in some centerpiece legislation. We learn from that. And I think in some ways the judicial branch is a microcosm of that kind of evolution as well. So I want to say I watched this. We all watched it. We all read about it. Grateful to all of the judicial council members who gave of their time. I mean, we asked a lot of you in a very short period of time to bring together much work. The AOC, 30% down in employees, spread thin, produced this report. Again, I'm astounded by the excellence in this branch and the cooperation, and you have my gratitude for what I think is a superior retrospective analysis. Also, it was an introspective analysis, and it gives us a prospective opportunity to continue this good work that cascades from this act. So that's my two cents, so you can start with your motions.
Well, I certainly didn't mean to cut anybody else off if they had. But what I tried to do, and you can follow along on page 6 of the executive summary of the trial court funding working group report, and I have 7 separate motions, and in reality, what I tried to do in 2 through 6 is to assign them to different areas and committees so that that work is continued. So I think what I'll do and what I'd like to do is read all 7 of them first, and then we can talk about them individually. But the first is...
Point of order. Can you put it all into one motion but have it be in 7 parts?
Sure.
That's what I would recommend.
Okay. So this is one motion with 7 separate parts. And so I'll read through those. First is accept the report of the trial court funding work group and adopt all 18 of its recommendations. The second part is recommendations 1, 2, and 13 address identifying and implementing statewide priorities and policies, including policies on physical access to courts, all to promote greater access to justice. That motion, or that portion of that motion, would be to refer recommendations 1, 2, and 13 to the Executive and Planning Committee to review, take appropriate action, and make timely recommendations to the Council. Recommendations 3, 12, 14, 16, and 17 relate to developing and promoting efficiencies, cost containment, accountability, and transparency. The recommendations address review of relevant data and developing indicators to assess if courts are operating efficiently and promoting equal access to justice and providing quality justice. So the motion is, again, to assign to Executive and Planning to form a new committee to address the non-funding related aspects of these recommendations. And again, that committee would be time-limited with a specific sunsetting date. So 3, 12, 14, 16, and 17 would be assigned to E&P for the creation of a new committee to take that appropriate action. Recommendations 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 18 relate to the new methodology to allocate funding, the development of funding priorities, and ensuring greater transparency in funding decisions. This portion of the motion would refer those to the restructured Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee to review, take appropriate action, and make timely recommendations to the Council. Recommendations 5 and 11 relate to developing performance indicators or metrics to demonstrate effective and accountable use of resources and provide decision-makers information on how resources are or can be used to increase access to justice. This portion of the motion would refer 5 and 11 to the SB 56 Advisory Committee to review, take appropriate action, and make timely recommendations to the Council. Recommendation 15 relates to identifying remaining vestiges of the pre-unification period that are insufficient or result in unnecessary costs. I recommend that that be referred to the Trial Court Presiding Judges and Court Executive as an Advisory Committee to review, take appropriate action, and make timely recommendations to the Council. And then lastly, I recommend that we direct the Administrative Director of the Courts to work with E&P to assess and report back to the Council in June on the resources required to provide necessary and appropriate levels of staff support to the various committees tasked with following up on the recommendations of the Trial Court Funding Work Group so as to be able to timely and effectively implement the directives in the various committees. That is my single motion with seven parts.
Can you repeat that?
I would second that motion. I just have one clarification question. The last part referred it to director with a report back in June. Is that too quick, or do you think that's doable?
No. That's a report back.
The staffing report,
well,
if you will.
I think it is quick, but I think that we have to do that as soon as we can, because a lot of this work needs to begin immediately, and some of it even before July, so that we can be ready for the new budget. So I think that it's important to have it done quickly.
So I have a motion and a second. I just have a requested clarification. On that part of the motion that refers several items to the new restructured Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, that's an issue we'll address later, correct? Or did we already approve
that yesterday?
No, we approved that
yesterday.
Thank you.
I've seen that somewhere, and I wanted to make sure. Judge Herman.
Yep. Justice Miller, recommendation 9 is going where again?
Recommendation number 9 would go to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee.
All right, and 9C has a technology component as a factor.
So is your recommendation that 9C go to the Internal Tech Committee?
I think there should be at least coordination between the Technology Committee and the...
I'll take that as a friendly amendment on 9C.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion or comment on either the report or the recommendation and the motion? Not seeing any hands. Yes, Judge Baker.
I just have a question. Is not recommendation number 6 really being addressed in item P on today's agenda?
Well, a lot of them are. But item 6, again, is going to go to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. I have motions on item P also, which I hope are coordinated with the motions we make here.
Be prepared.
One motion at a time.
What my concern was is I don't want the recommendations just to be adopted and go out into the ether. I want them all to be coordinated in some way. So they're all going to be assigned to specific committees who have a responsibility to report back to us.
Judge Ellsworth.
I think Judge Baker's point it brings up a good point, but I think this is just laying the groundwork in order to go to the next step. So if we accept the motion as it is indicated, it lays the foundation, in essence, for then the next piece of this that will be presented shortly. So I don't think in any way does it detract. I think it actually lays the groundwork. And so, therefore, I'm in favor of this motion as it has been presented.
Judge Rosenberg?
The motion is astute because sometimes we get reports, committees, entities get reports, and we say thank you, and then they can be put on a shelf for historical purposes. This motion ensures that we not only accept the report and the recommendations, but there be follow-up and that it be designated for various groups to follow up. So it's a very appropriate motion.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We will take a break for 15 minutes, reconvene, and address item P. Thank you.